Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the November 13th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Newman City Council, Freedom Festival in Potential Jeopardy by Ben Crane. The Newman City Council heard from the Newman GOAL, or Give Our Area Life, at their regular council meeting on Monday, citing concerns about planning of the annual Newman Freedom Festival. "We do not want to take over the whole festival," said GOAL member Heather Skinner. GOAL is a group of Newman residents who plan various events for other residents, including Trunk or Treat and the Christmas Extravaganza. However, the group is small and making plans for a whole festival is difficult for them. "We cannot physically take it on," GOAL President Felicity Albin said. According to the group, the lack of point person or someone to lead the various groups, businesses, and sponsors in planning has made plans for next year's festival impossible. As of right now, there is only one thing scheduled, the tractor pull. "The festival is not happening as of right now," Albin said. GOAL's next meeting is on November 19th in the community library and urge members of the public to attend to get planning for the festival sorted out. On the other hand, GOAL has had their Christmas extravaganza plans approved by the council. The extravaganza is planned from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. on December 7th, with carriage rides from 3 to 5 p.m. and a Christmas parade at 5:30 p.m. The festivities end with a tree lighting at 6 p.m. Roger Nuxall reported to the council that the water tower project is officially completed, ending the four-year process. Nuxall reported that overall the project finished under budget and all upgrades are expected to last years, if not decades. The council approved a payment of $137,000. He also reported that the water main project was completed by B&T Drainage and the council approved a $216,000 payment. Police Chief Dixie Brazelton reported that the new police squad car had been paid for and it does have insurance. She should have it by the end of December or early January from Crestwood if all items are installed. The car will be fully finished by spring with other technological installations planned to be made. She also presented the approximately 400-page Newman Police Policy and Procedures Handbook. We do not have one of these when I got here," she said. She also requested a full-size spare tire after getting a flat tire earlier this month. The cost of repairs was $29. Finally, the council approved Ordinance 2024-04, which simply states that tiny homes must be built like traditional homes or on a foundation with all required utilities. The next article, Arthur Village Board. Seaving hired as new Arthur Police Sergeant by Ariana Cherry. An executive session of the Arthur Village Board was held November 4th to discuss the hiring and compensation for a full-time officer sergeant for the Arthur Police Department. Skylar Seaving was approved for the position at an hourly rate of $33 an hour and was sworn in before the board. The board also approved a 50-50 economic development grant with the Arthur Association of Commerce in the amount of $1,400. This grant will help fund the WCIA-WCIX TV advertising package of 56 30-second commercials to encourage holiday shopping in Arthur. The AAOC is working on a slogan and will shoot new footage and located Arthur photos of Christmas scenes. During his monthly report presentation, Police Chief Elliot Tinnan detailed 110 citizen calls, one accident, and 121 officer-initiated calls. Additionally, he highlighted an increase in animal control tickets. Following report of the unlocked door at the park shed, Tinnan explained that the open door process. This process entails police investigating a location with an open or unlocked door to ensure there are no irregularities. Open doors can be reported by citizens or discovered during routine patrols. In addition, the board approved a proposal from Nico Asphalt Company to repair buggy lane ruts along Vine Street at a cost of $29,000. Employee health insurance was renewed and approved with a 4% increase. The dental and vision insurance was also approved, which had a small increase as well. Expenditures were approved with a total of $451,000. Finally, the board discussed and postponed action on Ordinance 1104A-2024, which would approve the 2024-2025 tax levy with an increase under the 5% required by Truth in Taxation hearing. The next article, Alternative Voting Methods High in Douglas County, All Local School Questions Fail, by Ben Crane. As the nation's attention turned to the polls on Election Day, the Douglas County Clerk's Office found itself at the center of a voting landscape that was both familiar and evolving. With a keen eye on the key aspects of the electoral process, the county's election officials provided a comprehensive overview of the trends and challenges faced during this pivotal election. One of the standout features of the Douglas County voting system was the implementation of grace registration, a process that allows eligible voters to register and cast their ballots on the same day. According to Judy Pollock, the Douglas County clerk, this option saw a significant increase in usage compared to previous elections. "We had a huge uptick of that for this election, bigger than I've ever seen before," Pollock stated, noting that the county saw over 175 grace registrations on Election Day, a substantial jump from the 70 recorded during the 2020 presidential election. The grace registration process required voters to provide two forms of identification, one of which must include their current residential address. This additional step, while time-consuming, was essential in ensuring the integrity of the electoral process. "We're looking for both of these pieces to the puzzle," the clerk explained, emphasizing the importance of verifying a voter's identity and residency before allowing them to participate in the election. "They could have had an FOID card and a driver's license. They could have an insurance card, a deed to their house, a mortgage insurance card, because, you know, some people come in and say, 'My driver's license, it doesn't have my new address.' And that's fine. That identifies you, plus we like the driver's license for your voter registration, and if you give us that piece of mail or something that identifies you at your residence, then we're good." Alongside the grace registration surge, Douglas County also experienced high levels of early voting and mail-in ballots, mirroring the trends observed in the 2020 presidential election. "We were very similar to 2020, which was huge numbers," Pollock said. "We got very close to them, not quite as much, but vote by mail was a little less, and the counter was a little more." The prevalence of early voting and mail-in ballots can be attributed to a variety of factors, including the COVID-19 pandemic and the increased awareness of alternative voting methods among the electorate. If you go back to 2016, we're always busier for the presidential, but 2020 drove hysteria. I'm not sure what 2024 was, whether there was so much, you know, talk about election corruption. You know, after 2020, people just had an urgency to vote now. We want to vote. I want to vote right now. We're at about 1,000 permanent vote by mail. The clerk's office worked diligently to ensure the smooth operation of the election despite the challenges posed by the high turnout and grace registration process. The final tallies were delivered by 8:30 p.m. on election night, a remarkable feat that left the team in awe. "It was amazing, for as busy as they were, how quickly they got back," Pollock remarked, crediting the team's adaptability and lessons learned from the 2020 election. Pollock's commitment to fairness, integrity, and transparency was evident throughout the process as the office addressed concerns about ballot security and worked to ensure that every voter felt confident in the integrity of the election. "The citizens of Douglas County elected me to do a good job, and I'm all about honesty, integrity, and being fair to the people," Pollock said, underscoring the importance of upholding the democratic principles that underpin the electoral process. As Douglas County looks ahead to the upcoming consolidation election in April, the clerk's office is committed to maintaining the integrity of the electoral process and engaging with the local community to foster greater civic participation. "The disappointing part about election is this one coming up in the spring is just as important to us locally as presidential is nationally, and we just don't get a big turnout," the clerk acknowledged, emphasizing the need to encourage residents to exercise their right to vote in all elections, regardless of their scale or prominence. In election results with impact on Douglas County communities, including the Arthur School District's referendum and both Arcola and Tuscola's at-large school board elections, all three failed. Arthur's referendum fell short by just 148 votes, with the district tallying votes from Douglas, Moultrie, Piatt, Champaign, and Coles County. For Arcola and Tuscola, both at-large school board elections, questions had to surpass a two-thirds supermajority or a simple majority in each precinct, both of which did not. There were no contested local elections. Republican Donald Trump carried the county with 72.3% of the vote, while Democrat Kamala Harris garnered 26.16%. All three state questions, election worker protection, candidate accountability, property tax relief, and assisted reproductive health, had majority yes votes in the county. The property tax question was the closest, with 50.01 to 49.99% split. All three passed statewide. All election results, as of now, are unofficial until being certified by election officials. Complete results are online at douglascountyill.gov. Regardless, great registrations, early voting, and mail-in ballots added wrinkles to the election to Pollock and her election team, but for them, it's simple. If you can live enough through a presidential election and COVID, you can do anything. Another article, Arthur voters narrowly reject school board, Cheek is optimistic, by Ben Crane. The Arthur School District's $24.6 million referendum to renovate the aging high school building fell just 148 votes short of the requirement majority in the recent election, leaving Superintendent Shannon Cheek disappointed but determined to find a path forward. The proposed improvements, which included expanding career and technical education spaces, creating a dedicated student commons area, and upgrading the HVAC system, were designed to address the building's pressing needs of the district students. I talked a lot about educating a kid now versus what it looked like 30 years ago. It's different, Cheek explained. Kids are different. Needs are different. So these spaces we're going to be creating, we're going to serve those needs well, and I think that it gets lost in this conversation a little bit. While the plan received positive feedback from those who engaged with the district, Cheek acknowledged that the challenge of reaching all community members. Sometimes what's obvious to me isn't completely obvious to everyone, Cheek said. We have to continue the process of raising awareness and getting people to understand the value of these improvements for our students. Walking into the main entrance of the building, you are met with a stairwell. After wandering through the halls, the County Chronicle eventually was able to find the district office in the basement. You see what I mean? Pretty obvious security concern here, Cheek said. Cheek allowed the County Chronicle to turn the building's facilities, showing outdated bathrooms, cramped classrooms, and overall outdated infrastructure, just to name a few detriments students, faculty, and staff overcome daily. The referendum's failure was not for lack of effort, as the district's Vote Yes committee worked tirelessly to advocate for the project. Cheek praised the committee's work, saying, "Without them, there's no way we'd have been this close." The superintendent emphasized that the responsibility for the referendum's failure rests with him as the leader of the district. "We fell short, and as the leader of this district, the responsibility is mine," Cheek said, "but I'm proud of the progress we've made." One of the bright spots, Cheek highlighted, was the increased community engagement and advocacy for the project. "We've got more people stepping up and passionately advocating for our students' needs, and that's incredibly valuable," he said. "Leadership is putting yourself out there, not on social media or in forums, but actually stepping up and saying, I believe in this, and this is what needs to happen." Cheek acknowledged the challenges of standing up to what you believe in, highlighting the navigation of the current social and political climate where disagreement can quickly turn into personal attacks. "We live in a world now that's very hard to disagree on things," he said. "You're taking a risk that your opinions are going to be, you know, your own personal character is going to be attacked, and that's not really about that." Looking ahead, the district plans to regroup and determine the next steps, potentially aiming for another referendum as soon as April 2025. Cheek expressed confidence that the community will support the necessary upgrades to the aging high school building, but he recognized the need to continue the process of raising awareness and getting people engaged. Cheek made it clear that the district has exhausted all other avenues of funding, highlighting the $5 million that the district planned to use was all they could allocate toward the project. He said that the breaking down into smaller ones would be impossible. "Our communities care about our kids, and I believe we'll get there," Cheek said. "It's a process, and we have to keep working to get people engaged and educated on their needs." We'll move now to the obituaries. Martha Jane Kiley, 77, of Rockford, passed away on Wednesday, November 6, 2024. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 21st at Fred C. Olson Chapel, 1001 2nd Avenue, Rockford. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, November 22nd at Christ United Methodist Church, 4509 Highcrest Road in Rockford, with Pastor Jane Bradford officiating. Memorials may be made to the Rock Valley College Care of School of Nursing. Herminia Dolores Valdez Montalvo, born March 26, 1931, in Cadereyta Jimenez, Nuevo León, Mexico, passed away peacefully on November 8, 2024, at her daughter's residence in Humboldt, surrounded by her loving family. Herminia's final moments were a testament to the profound love and connection she cultivated throughout her life. Visitation was held Monday, November 11th, at the Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola. Massive Christian burial was held Tuesday, November 12th, at the St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Arcola. Father Michael Trummer officiated. Burial will be at a later date in the Panteon Municipal Cemetery in Cadereyta, Mexico. Doris A. Naus, 81, of Northport, Florida, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 4:05 p.m. on Sunday, November 3, 2024, at Inglewood House in Englewood, Florida. A graveside service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, November 23rd, at the Arcola Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Deanna Ree Cousins Henningsen, age 85, passed away peacefully on Saturday morning, November 9th, 2024, at her residence, surrounded by her loving family. A funeral service will be held to honor her life at 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 14th at the Christian Family Fellowship, the Henningsen Building, located at 18 County Road 500 East Sadorus. She'll be laid to rest at the Lewis Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, November 13th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 66 East U.S. Highway 36 in Atwood. Roger Dennis Rice, 75, of Charleston, passed away at 5:36 p.m. on Monday, November 4, 2024, at his residence. Memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, November 16, at the New Hope Worship Center, 2175 East Harrison Avenue, Charleston. Pastor Sangman Corvacante will officiate. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. prior to the service at the church. The Edward Funeral Home in Arcola is assisting with arrangements. Chad E. Luden, 44, of Atwood, passed away too early on life on Wednesday, November 6, 2024. A visitation was held November 12th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood, with funeral services following. Burial was at the Keller Cemetery in Lovington with full military honors. Brian K. Miller, 65, of Cerro Gordo, passed away October 27, 2024, at Carl Hospital, Urbana. Graveside service were held Thursday, October 31st, at Cerro Gordo Cemetery. Another article, local veteran flies to nation's capital on honor flight by Ben Crane. At 82 years old, Jerry Blaudow's eyes still shine with the pride of his service in the United States Navy. Recently, the Tuscola resident had the opportunity to revisit his military past during an honor flight to the nation's capital, an experience that left an indelible mark on the octogenarian. Blaudow's journey began when his son Jared approached him with a surprising proposition. He asked me if I was doing anything on the 15th of October, and I said, why? And he said, how would you like to go? And I said, I'd love it, Blaudow recalled, his voice brimming with excitement. Land of Lincoln Honor Flight Program had selected Blaudow to be part of their latest excursion to Washington, D.C., providing all-expenses-paid trips for military veterans. Though unaware of the selection process, Blaudow excitedly accepted. Blaudow's military career spanned from 1962 to 1966 during the height of the Vietnam War era. He enlisted in the Navy after his brother-in-law shared his positive experiences, and Blaudow found himself stationed in various locations, including Texas, Florida, and aboard the USS Saratoga, a massive aircraft carrier that held over 8,000 men. On the morning of October 15th, Blaudow joined approximately 90 other veterans and their guardians for the early morning departure from Springfield. The group's arrival in the nation's capital was met with a heartfelt welcome as crowds of people lined the airport clapping and thanking the veterans for their service. The day-long itinerary was meticulously planned, with the veterans visiting a series of iconic memorials and landmarks. From the World War II Memorial to the Korean and Vietnam Veterans Wall, the Lincoln Memorial, and the Air and Space Museum, each stop was a reminder of the sacrifices made by those who served. But it was the visit to Arlington National Cemetery and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier that left the deepest impression on Blaudow. The most emotional moment, however, came upon Blaudow's return to Springfield, where he was greeted by a crowd of well-wishers, including his old family, who lined the hallway to shake his hand and express their gratitude. "It just surprised the crap out of me that they had come here," Blaudow said, his voice wavering with emotion. For Blaudow, the honor flight was a profound experience, one that he described as awesome and something he will never forget. As he reflected on the trip, the 82-year-old veteran shared a powerful sentiment that encapsulates the enduring spirit of those who have served. Basically, you think about all of the people that basically lost their lives so you could be here. It was just touching at every place we went and at all the stuff they've done there to celebrate these people. Another article, Sprucing Up Arthur's Downtown by Trudy Feyerizen. You may have noticed some lovely changes in downtown Arthur. Quantum Realm Construction, owned and operated by Mark Montgomery, has enhanced two building storefronts this past year. It started with Marcia Boyer hiring Mark to enhance the north entrance of Yoder's Lamps, Antiques, and Collectibles, which then opened the door to doing similar work on the adjoining Oddfellows building on the corner of Illinois and Vine. Quantum Real Construction has been in business for 1 year and has already made a big impact. Mark, the grandson of Arthur business owner Jerry Winters, is a visionary and expert designer who takes pride in restoring older buildings. His goal is to find its unique character by studying old photographs in order to keep the classical antique design, while also enhancing it with modern techniques. He and Marcia worked side by side to create the first storefront design, and after seeing his work, the Independent Order of Oddfellows signed a contract with Mark and handed over the reins for him to revamp the 1870s building, the oldest remaining in Arthur. Charlene Smith, secretary, financial secretary, and official representative for the Arthur Odd Fellows chapter, shared that this nationwide organization has been in Illinois since 1838. Yet upon research, the roots of the lodge can be traced back to the 1730s in England. Women, the Rebeccas, were included in 1851. Its motto is friendship, love, and truth. The goals of the organization are to build noble character in its members that leads to the pursuit of extending sympathy and aid to those in need and influencing the good of humanity. The Arthur chapter has 32 members who meet the first Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. and when able have a social the third Tuesday of each month. Charlene shared that a few years ago they bought all new uniforms for the football team and that each year they donate the Christmas funds for the needy children and look for ways to assist widows and others in distress. Dues of $42.50 per year, collected once a year, and grants are applied to raise funds to disperse. The rent collected from the office space John Stevens and Tim Valentine have in the back of the building, as well as the space Second Act Thrift Store has in front, also increases their funds to donate. The Oddfellow also hosts dances every Saturday night, weather permitting, from 7 to 9. Calvin Miller and his friend Connie sing country music. For those who need assistance in getting up the stairs, they also have a chairlift available. Their address is 109 East Illinois Street. A highlight for them to beautify this historic building with such a rich heritage and ongoing influence. Mark Montgomery has always wanted to spruce up downtown Arthur and is grateful to the several workers who have contributed to this endeavor. He's found the hard work to be both a privilege and a joy. Mark and his team are particularly proud of the work on the cornice style of the old Oddfellows building. A cornice is the traditional ornate handiwork displayed at the top of a building, which Arthur has quite a lot, and it's comparable to crown molding on the inside of a home. Mark came up with a modern look but still resembles the original building and designed a new overhang to complement Marsha's building. He has also brought most of his materials from Legacy Building Supply, and Oy's Hardware has been another major contributor of both supplies and advice. Mark commented, "Charlie and the team there have always given me a really good advice." Local contractor Bill Gingrich has also done exceptional concrete and given helpful input, and Nicely's quality coating put on the new roof. When designing the front of the building, Mark said he wanted to carry the theme of theater associated with the Little Theater's thrift store, so he created an antique marquee sign with copper edging. The stone that surrounds the foundation of the building is travertine stone from Italy. Mark has a keen eye for detail and seeks to do high-quality, unique designs. He said his hope is that he and his team's work provide a spark for the redevelopment of downtown Arthur by setting a new standard that promotes tourism, inspires other businesses to want to enhance their storefronts, and entices new businesses to locate here. He mentioned what a great setup Arthur has for such endeavors in that the TIF, tax increment financing money, is matched 50% in the town, so downtown establishments can literally double their investments on anything they do. Quantum Real Construction and Wood Shop can be found at 161 North Spruce Street in Arthur. Another article, federal judge strikes down Illinois assault weapons ban, setting up a likely appeal. Southern District Court says law violates the Second Amendment, by Peter Hancock of Capital News. A federal judge in East St. Louis on Friday struck down Illinois' assault weapons ban on the grounds that it violates the Second and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution and issued an order barring the state from enforcing it. That order, however, was stayed for 30 days, giving the state time to file an appeal before it takes effect. In a 168-page opinion released Friday afternoon, Judge Stephen McGlynn sided with the plaintiffs in the case, who argued that assault-style weapons banned under the law are commonly used for legal purposes such as self-defense. What is particularly disturbing is that the prohibition of weapons that are commonly owned and used by citizens are now banned, depriving citizens of a principal means to defend themselves and their property in situations where a handgun or shotgun alone would not be the citizen's preferred arm, McGlynn wrote. In March, before the case went to trial, McGlynn issued a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of the law, saying the plaintiffs challenging the law were likely to prevail on the merits of the case. But the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals reversed that decision, and in July, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review it, along with several other cases challenging the law, and remanded the cases back to district courts for full proceedings. The case before McGlynn was the subject of a week-long trial in September. Two other cases, each with multiple sets of plaintiffs, are pending before the district court judges in the Northern District of Illinois in Chicago. Meanwhile, a three-judge panel of the 7th District Circuit is scheduled to hear oral arguments on Tuesday, November 12th, in a case challenging Cook County's local assault ban weapon. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul did not immediately comment on McGlynn's ruling. Governor J.B. Pritzker issued a statement saying he expects the Attorney General will file an immediate appeal and for the law to be upheld through the process. The Protect Illinois Communities Act was a result of hundreds of hours of deliberation between legal experts, legislators, and advocates, and it makes Illinois a safer place for everyone, Pritzker said in a statement. Despite those who value weapons of war more than public safety, this law was enacted and it has protected Illinoisans from the constant fear of being gunned down in places where they ought to feel secure. Gun rights groups like the Firearm Police Policy Coalition meanwhile issued statements celebrating the ruling. We're grateful that the court properly found that these bans violate the constitutionally protected rights of Illinois residents and visitors. As we clearly showed at trial, PICA fails even under the Seventh Circuit's misguided test that conflicts with binding Supreme Court precedent, said FPC President Brandon Combs, noting the group was hopeful the U.S. Supreme Court would strike down similar bans. Another article, LAAH High School to perform mutually assured destruction. The Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School Drama Club is putting on its fall play called Mutually Assured Destruction, 10 plays about brothers and sisters by Don Zolaitis. Performance dates are Friday, November 22nd at 7 p.m., Sunday, November 24th at 2 p.m. Tickets will be sold at the door. Students and seniors are half price. The play depicts 10 decades worth of sibling relationships. From sibling rivalries to helping each other fake their deaths, audience will enjoy laughing at all of the strange and funny situations that siblings find themselves in. The official description from PlayScripts.com is a century's worth of sibling squabbles is boiled down into 10 vignettes in this era-hopping tribute to family. Each short play explores a distinct facet of brother and sisterhood, from fights over who caused mom and dad to split, 1985, I'm pretty sure this is your fault, to daring escape plots that only two sisters could pull off, 1922, very, very cold feet. No matter the decade, audience will see themselves in these 10 distinct shorts about undeniable bond between siblings through the ages. Another article, Lakeland College honors 2024 Non-Traditional Student of the Year Awards and nominees. Lakeland College presented the Non-Traditional Student of the Year Award to Gertie Schrock, Tuscola, during a ceremony on Tuesday, November 7th. Schrock was among 11 students who were recognized for their perseverance and outstanding determination in pursuing their academic goals. The nominees were Jessica Jones of Tuscola, Jean Michael Rincon Rojas, Columbia, Kelly Richardson, Charleston, Eric Stanley, Charleston, Corrine Coad, Toledo, Lacey Crawley, Mattoon, Darren Miller, Shelbyville, Tamara Beck, Stewartson, Glenn Sharpmack, East Alton, and Robert Shiraga, Mattoon. The individuals honored this evening are a special group of students. We know their journeys have been full of obstacles, and yet as they come to class every day, ready to learn with smiles on their faces, you would never guess the hardship they've overcome to be here today, said Kelly Alley, Director of Marketing and Public Relations. With resilience and determination, they inspire their peers and instructors. They're all shining examples of what it means to be Lakers. Gertie Schrock is a non-traditional student from Tuscola. Growing up in the Amish community, she was taught German as her first language and was not afforded the opportunity to earn a high school diploma. As an adult, she enrolled in Lakeland's adult education program to earn her GED along with her daughter. She completed her GED and currently studies in Lakeland's BNA program to fill her job of becoming a CNA. Schrock was nominated by Adult Education Transition Coordinator Mariah Whitelandis. In the nomination forum, Whitelandis said, "You could not ask of a better student than Gertie. She stands up as a beacon of strength to those who are lucky enough to know her." Jessica Joan is a non-traditional student from Tuscola who attends Lakeland to pursue her dream of working in archaeology. She balances her college studies with two jobs, demonstrating her great determination to complete her degree. After graduating from Lakeland, she plans to transfer to a university to continue pursuing her archaeological studies. Jones was nominated by Director of TRIO Programs, Lori Orensorge. In the application, Orensorge said, "Jessica is a very humble person with grounded values. She's thankful for all the opportunities that Lakeland College has provided to her." And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.